powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With gig speeds everywhere, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. In Cox serviceable areas, speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, howdy, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Prog Watch. I want to thank you all for coming along for the ride. I've got something a little bit different lined up for this week. A few weeks ago, I made a connection with Simon Godfrey. He's been in a number of bands, including Shineback and Tiny Fish, and he's put out a number of records on his own as Simon Godfrey. And he's also the brother of the English producer and instrumentalist Jem Godfrey, who, those of you who are fans of Frost will know Jem's name very well. So anyway, I was able to sit down and have a little chat with Simon. He was feeling a little under the weather at the time, but he soldiered on. So I'm going to go ahead and play some of that, and we're going to be playing some music from his various projects, Tiny Fish, Shineback, and his solo work. And I'm going to let it rip now. All right, so I have with me today Simon Godfrey, who has been in bands such as Tiny Fish, Shineback, and now he's embarking on some solo stuff here. And Simon isn't feeling real well today, but he has decided to soldier on and provide this interview, so I appreciate it very much. So yeah, if he has a little cough here or there, forgive him, folks.
It'll be the laughter that will set me into the coughing, trust me.
Simon is known to have a bit of a sense of humor and not take himself too seriously, for those of you out there who aren't familiar too much with his work.
But yes, I am the anti-Stephen Wilson.
He said it, not me. No, I get what you say about Wilson. I mean, you never see the guy smile, really. You know?
Well, to be really honest with you, I was back in the UK a couple of months ago, and I was lucky enough to see him play at the Royal Albert Hall, and he was very humorous between the songs.
Was he?
Yeah, he was an extremely good front man, and he kept the crowd entertained. I think he really has sort of like hit that mark where his songs and his subject matters are very serious, and, you know, he treats his music seriously. But, you know, he likes to be at least a little warm and lighthearted in between the songs, because who wants to be unremittingly depressing?
Right, right, exactly. For those of you who don't know, Simon is from the UK, but now he resides in Philadelphia.
Yay, go Phillies!
Oh, no, I'm from Pittsburgh. We don't like Philly. Except for you.
Yeah, I know. I've quickly come to the realization that the world hates the Eagles, which the football team, not the band.
Right, right.
Added here. But the bottom line here is that I'm not a huge football fan. I'm very, very much a baseball fan, though.
Okay, how about hockey?
Hockey, I go see the Flyers. I probably catch them maybe about two or three times a season when money and time allows, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm suffering through the Penguins not being too hot right now.
To be really honest with you, I personally think that when your team isn't there, it's very easy to support a team that's winning. It's when they're not winning that they need your support, really.
Right. That's what my wife says. How come you're watching them? They stink. Well, yeah, they stink right now, but that's I'm a diehard. I've been watching them since I was a kid, you know?
Well, good on you, sir.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess, you know, maybe we should get people a little more familiar with your work here. Yeah. That's kind of the point. You want to talk a little bit about where you've been, what you've done, where you are now?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I started life, actually, funnily enough, for the first 10 years of my musical career, I played drums. Okay. I was the drummer in a band called Freefall, which contained myself, a guy called Jim Sanders on guitar, a bass player called Paul Woolwood on bass, and my brother Jem Godfrey on keyboards, who is now the keyboard player and principal songwriter in the band called Frost.
Of course, yes, I've played them on the show.
There we are then. I took a break from progressive music for about 10 years, funnily enough, actually, and then I was lured back in after I was doing a session for another musician, and one of the other session musicians in that band was in a progressive rock band called Landmark. That was the bass player called Steve G. And Landmark are quite a big and well-known band in the UK for progressive music. And he kind of reintroduced me to the scene. And as a result, I went out and bought what I thought were the people that were worth listening to at the time. I went and bought myself, I think, a little bit of Flower Kings. I bought some early Stephen Wilson stuff, some from the Delirium years, and funnily enough, I actually bought the first album by Spock's Beard, The Light, and those were my three sort of, like, I thought I'd cover the big base of music in progressive rock, and that kind of got me back into it, which led me to form a band called Tiny Fish with ex-Freefall guy Jim Sanders on guitar and Paul Woolwood on bass, along with a gentleman called Robert Ramsey, who was our lyricist, but also did a kind of strange thing that maybe not a lot of bands do, which he would do. If you remember, Peter Gabriel would do these strange soliloquies
in
the numbers back during the days when he was with Genesis. Rob Ramsey would kind of do something similar, and he would walk out on stage with these very strange costumes and deliver these little spoken word sequences between the songs. And sometimes after a little while, we realized we could incorporate his speaking, his spoken word sections actually into the songs themselves. So we were in that band along with a drummer called Leon Camfield for about 5 years. And then around about the end of 2013, I met my wife, who is a native Philadelphian, and decided to move from the UK to the US, and now I am now resident here full-time. And I have a new band now with a guy called Joe Cardillo, who's on keyboards, and a gentleman called Tom Hyatt, who is the bass player in a band called Echolin.
Okay, hey, yeah, I know Echolin. We've played them here too.
Oh, well, there we go then. And we're currently, we've been using a number of drummers for live shows, and I play a little bit of drums still myself, but we're in the process of sorting out a new drummer to flesh out that lineup. And that band is called Valdez, and we should hopefully be releasing an album sometime over the summer of next year.
Great. I can't wait to hear that. So where did the whole Shineback thing fit in there?
Well, Shineback was the project that I immediately took up the reins of after Tiny Fish laid down to rest, so to speak.
So that's done then, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest with you, I always like to say never. I don't like shutting doors.
Sure.
And they all of these guys, Jim and Paul and Rob, they were the guys that I've known for years, and they're very good friends of mine. And none of us particularly wanted to see that band fall by the wayside, but Jim is now resident in Sweden. I'm now resident in the US, and it was just, you know, too logistically too difficult to carry that band on. So
right.
we all decided to bow out gracefully on a high, so to speak. And as such, that's what I decided to do. I decided to pick up Shine Back as a project with both myself and lyricist Rob Ramsey. And we took that into a slightly different direction. We took that into a much more sort of high-tech, electronic, combining electronica with live drums and live guitars and live bass.
Yeah, it seems a bit more proggy maybe than some of the Tiny Fish. I got to say, you write a catchy song for sure, man. You know,
oh, thank you very much.
Some of the Tiny Fish stuff was, you know, I don't know if I'd say it was the proggiest, but there were prog elements, but it was always like really catchy. You know, you've got a good way with, you know, a good melody and stuff. And one of my ex-co-hosts used to kind of get on bands that would make like the pop prog stuff. And I'm like, no, man, you can't criticize that. These guys have got to pay the bills too, you know?
Well, it was, do you know, I have to say that, as is often with many bands, you'll find that there are members within each of the band which have particular tastes and particular desires. Myself, our drummer Leon Canfield, and Rob Ramsey had slightly more esoteric and more progressive leanings, whereas Jim Sanders and Paul Ward, while they loved a lot of progressive music, liked to hear a song at the core of any tune that we wrote. And being a band, it's a collaborative and a democratic process. And even though I tended to come up with a lot of the original ideas for the songs, they would flesh it out. And you want to listen to every member of the band. So we kind of toned the progressive elements down a bit because we didn't want to alienate two-fifths of the band, to be really honest with you.
Sure. I always said, I've been in a few in my day, nothing even nearing what you're doing, you know, but yeah, it's like being married to three or four other guys, you know, it really is almost like a marriage, you know, when you're
exactly
in a band.
Exactly right, yeah, and all marriages, any marriage has compromises.
Give and take, right.
And we got on like a house on fire. It was a very, very good band to be in, and, you know, and I miss them very much because the chemistry in a band, I think, is an incredibly important thing. I mean, I've been in bands where people are excellent players and they've got chops falling out of their fingers left, right and center, but the chemistry wasn't there, and it was never right. as satisfying when you're sitting in a rehearsal room or a writing room as when you are when you like somebody and you respect what they do. And as a result, that was one of the reasons which I think kept Tiny Fish together for those 7 years that we were together. It was a very enjoyable experience.
Voyage 35 Prague Radio.
So if I wanted to, here, you can like kind of help me program the show, actually, on which I'm going to do them. If you were going to pick one Tiny Fish song that you thought really summed up the essence of that band, can you think of one off the top of your head?
Yeah, I would say Motorville probably is the one track that I think sums up Tiny Fish really as a unit. It was actually the first track from the very first album, the eponymous album Tiny Fish, and it has just about everything that Tiny Fish wanted to do as a band, and it kind of formed the template of the music that we made from that moment on. And even though it is an early track, I'm still very proud of that track because we all contributed to it equally, and it was a track that couldn't have arrived in the world without all of us working on it.
All right. Well, you know what? I think at this point in the show, I think we will go ahead and play that track right now.
Flight across the Cape, I made my escape before the black, cold dog's noses could touch my thighs. I poured myself a drink for the suicidal into a chair and proceeded to twist the bottle's neck until I woke up in Ecuador with two pairs of pants and a big bold nurse who said she had contacts. On the inside, that is. I'd left it all for $15 a day plus expenses. Tidy sum if you spend it all on bones. so now it's the right time. Where the liquid black runs out through the streets, and the back of beyond is right next door. It's time to get some real work done.
So that the song Motorville was really the beginning of Tiny Fish and kind of set a blueprint for what that band was going to do from that moment in. It's a great track.
You want to talk a little bit about Shineback at this point?
Shineback was something which made it out into the world because I have a huge backlog of material. That never made it really to the light of day, and Shineback was a mixture of songs which just didn't really feel like it was right to introduce that to the Tiny Fish world. It was much more electronic. I mean, my big love is I do love a lot of electronic music, and I'm talking like spanning everywhere back from the sort of Terry Riley, Rainbow and Curved Air, Wendy Carlos, early sort of like 60s stuff, Hooked on Bark, all the way through the sort of like the Tangerine Dream and the
Kraftwerk
and Jean-Michel Jarre.
Yeah,
you know, all the way through to bands like Depeche Mode and upwards onto Aphex Twin and Squarepusher as well. I one of the things which always drew me to progressive rock was I loved the fact that, especially during the 70s, progressive bands were very, very much at the cutting edge of technology. These were the guys that were using the Mini Moogs. These were the guys that were using the Mellotrons. These were the guys that were using all of this great technology.
I was trying to explain some Kraftwerk to my son, and I was trying to tell him, you know what, when they were doing this, there were no electronic drums, you know.
Yeah,
there weren't sequences, you know. These people were inventing this stuff back then, so you kind of have to listen to it in that light these days.
Exactly right. And once you know of them in that context, you realize exactly how groundbreaking they were. And of course, you know, in a lot of ways, they became almost like the unwitting godfathers of the techno scene as well in Detroit, where they started mixing some of the Kraftwerk stuff with some of the samples and soul that they had. You've got an entirely new genre even out of that as well.
Right. Very interesting.
Regards to Shineback, what I was trying to do, and this is going to sound like a very this is a very simplified summation of what I wanted to do in Shineback, but I effectively wanted to try and make progressive music with modern electronic instruments and blend that with some of the traditional stuff. And out of that came the Shineback project, which myself and Rob Ramsey, my lyricist, co-writer, authored. And we created an album called Rise Up, Forgotten, Return Destroyed, which was a kind of story album, which followed a young girl. It's actually a very dark story. It was about a young girl who was having... it was a young woman who was having real problems with sleeping, and then it takes on a slightly more surreal twist when she's given some advice by her and I use this inverted commas her therapist says, well, why don't you imagine taking a video camera into your dreams and recording what you see? And the story effectively follows Dora as she goes into her dream world and effectively discovers what's been happening on in her past life, these buried memories. And this is all very subjective. There's no science involved in this idea at all. But this idea that she came from an abusive family and then it goes into this very dark and complex world, and it was actually based upon some of the troubles that Dora had on one of my friends, who I won't mention specifically their name, but they lived for years thinking that their uncle was their uncle, when it turned out many years later they found out that it was their father. And I used this kind of as a blueprint for the hapless character of Dora. And basically about her mental breakdown, and when she eventually returns from the dream world, in which she meets some very fantastical creatures, some more human than others, she goes back and wreaks vengeance upon her father, and basically it just is a tale about the unraveling of one person's psyche. And it was a very challenging album to write, but an incredibly satisfying one to see the light of day, because I always remember I was having some issues about the idea of the abuse of a child and whether or not I should actually have that as, you know, for entertainment purposes, right, if you will, by putting it on a record. And I was having a conversation with a guy called David Longdon, who is the lead singer in a band called Big Train.
Right,
yeah. And he said, well, you should never be afraid to shine a light into dark corners.
That's a great quote. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a very, that really sort of like hit home to me. And he's absolutely right. These are stories. And if you can come to terms with some of the darker elements of human nature in such a fashion, it allows us all to examine them and maybe come to terms and maybe be at peace with them afterwards. Because I think, you know, into every life, a little rain must fall. And we all have some darkness in our world. And we should not be afraid to shine a light on into those dark areas. And so David's quote really sort of like paid off and served as the motivation to really see the story through and make the album happen.
Oh, it's a great piece of work. I really enjoy it. Here on the show, I was really thinking that maybe I would end up playing the title cut, Rise Up Forgotten.
Okay, yeah, but it's certainly, I mean, I love that track. It's possibly the most representative track on the album.
Well, then we're going to play it, right?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and tell us why. I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead and tell us why.
No, I would just say the reason being is that the title track is about 12 minutes long, and it's I threw just about every trick I could possibly think of into that song, arrangement-wise, harmonically. There's an a cappella section, there's electronica, there's live drums, there's heaviness, there's glitch core sort of electronica, there's mellotrons, there's mini moogs, there's guitar solos. Right. I mean, basically just about everything that I could possibly think of I put into it, and from a thematic story point of view, it serves as the pivot point, if you will, the fulcrum where effectively Dora the character finally accepts what's going on in her dream world and resolves to when she goes back out into the real world, do something about it.
Yeah, it's a great track, and we're going to go ahead and lay it on them now.
Too much for me to say goodbye, goodbye.
Too much. There's nothing here you can't recover. I hope we meet again.
Too much.
We saw ourselves in one another. Until I see you, then goodbye. There's nothing here you can't recover.
Save yourself for yourself.
Mothers and fathers are taking the chances for children they love every day.
Save yourself for yourself. Save yourself for yourself.
Who fights for those who are dead and their legacy? Now it is fading away.
Save yourself.
Save yourself, save yourself, save yourself, save yourself.
Ah!
Okay, so once again, that was Rise Up Forgotten, Return Destroyed by Shineback. What year was that, 2013?
I think it was 2013. Yeah, it was the very first, I have to say, I've got to mention something. It was the very first release by a label called Bad Elephant
Music. My buddy Martin Hutchinson now works for them.
Indeed, yes. It's run by a gentleman called David Elliott, who started life as a sound man, funny enough, for a couple of UK progressive rock bands, and literally toured the whole of the UK many, many times in the back of a beaten up old van, and then turned DJ. Once the podcast revolution hit, he started his own podcast called The European Perspective, and it was through that I met him. And then he started talking about the idea of forming a label, because one of the great things about David is David's very much in the idea of putting artists before money. And that's not to say that he's an old hippie and doesn't value the idea of turning a good profit, but he does recognise that for many, many years, artists have got a fairly lousy deal from the record deals that they've had to get contracted to.
Yeah.
And so what he did is he put together Bad Elephant Music, which was a real, genuine attempt to try and redress that balance, to give bands which might not necessarily find a home and give them a chance to release material, and also a chance to make a genuine profit out of it as well. And he has this great deal, which is effectively he will pay for the recording of an album as long as it's within a reasonable budget. He's not talking about going out into space and recording it on the moon or anything like that. Once the recording is done and everything has been released and the recording costs have been recouped, so to speak, he literally does split the profits 50-50 between the label and the artist.
That's fantastic.
And that's an incredible deal, and not many people, in fact, hardly anybody that I've ever spoken to have ever heard of that kind of deal before. And we came to an accord, David and I, and he sort of like said, I'd love to form a label. And I said, well, look, I tell you what, I have this idea for an album, which was the first Shineback album. How about if I release that album through your label as the first release, you can make whatever mistakes you like when it comes to you can sort out all of the ideas behind the admin and stuff. You can use this as a test, so to speak, and see how the label goes. And we did it, and the response was incredible. I mean, it sold like hotcakes, and we were a little bit unprepared for it, but it really helped, and I'm glad it did help set David and the Bad Elephant label on course for the success that they currently enjoy today. They released 9 albums this year. It's 2015, and I think they're set to release probably close to about 10 to 12 albums by different artists next year.
I keep seeing from Martin on Prog Radar, he keeps announcing, you know, they signed this act, they signed that act. I've seen maybe 3 or 4 new acts being signed to the label in the last month or two. So, yeah, it seems to be taking off, and I'm really glad that something like that can happen in this day and age.
I know it's a very rare thing to find. You're probably looking at only a handful of labels around the world that are genuinely trying to further the cause of progressive music. I mean, probably stateside, I suppose. Radiance is one of the ones which Radiant Records, and maybe 10T as well. I could reel off a list of European labels,
right,
as well,
but a couple others over there, right?
Yeah, exactly. But they are thin on the ground. People who genuinely do want to put great progressive music out there, and BEM, Bad Elephant Music, are definitely one of amongst that number.
Very cool.
My name is Bond, James Bond, and I love the Malaysia rock music. That's why I listen to Prog Watch. It's marvelous.
Your latest release is on Bad Elephant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've released basically an album a year with Bad Elephant. I released Shine back in 2013. I released an acoustic album called Motherland, which is much more song-based. And that was largely a sort of postcard to England saying, thank you very much for looking after me all of those years. And it was just songs about saying goodbye to things. It could be places, it could be people, it could be things, you never know. But that was released in 2014, and late 2015, only a few weeks back, I released what hopefully will be a series of EPs, extended player releases. Black Bag Archive, yes. Yeah. And that was basically down to the fact that I had a massive backlog of material which never really found a home in any of the other projects I was working on. And again, I approached David Elliott and said, look, I have all of this stuff. I'd like to release it. Would you be interested? And he said, well, let me have a listen to it. He gave it a listen and he came back to me and said, sure, we would love to release it. So hopefully we should be releasing something every probably three to four months. Maybe a six-track EP every 3 to 4 months, and the first one was released a couple of weeks ago.
Cool, very cool. From that, what do you like? I listened to it a couple of times. I'm not super familiar with it at this point, but I do remember thinking a few of them had a little more of that experimental Shineback kind of quality to them, a little proggier, some of them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably the most representative of the batch on that is a track called Into Idle Fury, which was originally destined for the fourth Tiny Fish album, which would never came to light. That's got a much more harder edge to it. It's very jagged. It's got some sort of like Nine Inch Nails kind of feel in there, but it's also got this wonderful sort of like Mellotron sort of like grandeur, pomposity at the end, yeah, if you will. Which you know, a lot of these things are happy accidents, and I just happened to hit the wrong patch on a synthesizer, and I got this great grand Mellotron. I went, oh, that sounds nice.
Awesome.
So that's probably the track that I would recommend as a lead-off track if anybody ever wanted to listen to the Black Bag Archive series.
All right, we'll play that one here. Thank you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And I guess probably why don't we talk a little bit about coming to the United States maybe. So, you know, you just moved to the United States a few years ago. What kind of culture shock do you have?
To be really honest with you, I suspect any American would have a very similar experience if they came to England, i.e., you kind of think you know what's going on until suddenly you realize you have no idea what's going on. Crossing the street was a bit problematic for the first sort of like year.
You're looking the wrong way, right?
Yeah, I had no idea which direction the cars were coming from. As a result, I was like looking like a seven-year-old must look when they're crossing the road. And sort of like I was constantly looking which way I was, you know, to each direction in the hope that I was going to spot something bearing down upon me and not killing me.
Yeah.
So, but that was, it was, to be really honest with you, I've been really bowled over by the, you know, the friendliness and the generosity of America. As an Englishman, I think that the biggest shock to the system has been just the sheer size of the country. It's just the idea that I went to San Diego not too long ago, and the idea of sitting 5 hours in a plane traveling west and landing in the same country is a bit of a mind boggle for the average Englishman, you know, travel 3,000 miles and do that. But
what I mean, England's probably about the size of Texas, right? Maybe
No, not even that. There's actually a lake in Canada that you can put the whole of the British Isles in. It's there. There's a great fun fact that I like to tell Americans about how small the United Kingdom is that you can stand anywhere in the UK and be within a day's reach of the sea. Even in the most central point of the UK, you are no more than 60 miles away from the sea. That's how small that island is.
Yeah.
And when an Englishman arrives in the UK, or Englishwoman, I should say, as well, arrives from the UK to the US, just getting your head around the sheer scale of distance and the size is pretty mind-boggling, but it's an exciting thing. I find myself sort of like almost with that kind of pioneer spirit. I want to leap into a car and just head west and see what I find.
Sure. Yeah, I'm trying to see some parts of it. You know, my wife and I have a little bit of a bucket list. I recently got to see the Southwest because my son was stationed in the Army down there. I don't know if I ever would have seen that, but I got to go to Carlsbad Caverns down in Arizona. You know, there's some really neat things to see in the United States.
Yeah, and this is one of the other reasons why sort of, you know, a lot of people from outside the States wonder why you hardly ever see any American tourists. And the reason being is that there's almost every kind of terrain that you can find in the rest of the world in the U.S.
Right, but they don't have English pubs, you know.
Well, apart from pubs.
It's on my bucket list to get to the United Kingdom someday.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it entirely depends on whether or not you like your beer weak and gassy. If you do, then maybe the UK is not the place for you. But there is certainly some great drinking to be had in the US, in the UK. My wife particularly likes UK beer. She's a big fan of UK beer, and so as a result, trying to pry her hand free of a pint mug is pretty difficult at times because she loves that stuff.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of stuff. Your pale ales and even some of the Scottish ales, love it. Malty and not all this crazy super hops make your eyes bleed kind of, you know, the craft beer thing over here. It's like, let's see how much hops, you know, in typical American spirit. Let's see how excessive we can get. We'll try to make so your eyes water when you drink this. And the guys stand around making these faces saying, yeah, I like this. And it's like, no, you don't. It's like nobody likes the 1.5 million Scoville hot sauce either.
No, it becomes a bit of like it's just there as a challenge.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a measuring of something contest, which we won't mention for the general audience.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, one of the other things I will say is that if you like the beer in the UK, all you need to do is head off to Europe, and the beer suddenly gets even more amazing in Europe. There's some, especially in Germany and Belgium.
Yeah.
The Netherlands, God, those people, they really know how to make their beer.
Yeah, I've heard a quote that Belgium's like the Disneyland of beer.
That's a great way of describing it.
I am a beer judge, actually, which I don't know if all the listeners here know. There's an actual test you can take here in the United States, and it's not like sit in the bar and drink a bunch of beers. It's when I took it, it was an essay test, and it was like 3 hours long, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, we judge beer competitions every year, and basically there's a set of guidelines that, you know, beers are supposed to adhere to, and we judge them based on how closely they adhere to the classic model for that particular style of beer. So I am a bit of a beer aficionado, I guess. So
you like your beer like you like your music, epic.
Yes, exactly. I guess I'm just that kind of guy, the prog squats, you know, bigger than life. I like bigger than life beer, bigger than life music.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you...
Voyage 35 Radio.
Do you want to talk at all about your brother at all? You know, I mean, what's that been like? You know, I mean...
To be really honest with you, it's been great, really, to, you know, I mean... Jem and I have, you know, obviously we can't be that close now because we live in separate continents. But, you know, Jem is an amazingly gifted keyboard player and writer and arranger.
Producer.
He's an astonishing talent. And, you know, being my younger brother, I'm incredibly proud of what he's achieved in his world. I mean, he obviously has a a day job being a producer as well. And I have to say, if I was one thing that I would say, he does receive a little bit of criticism for not producing more Frost material, but he has to keep the wolf from the door, like us all, and the bills have to be paid.
Sure.
And as a result, he the poor soul has to squeeze Frost into all of the tiny little blitz of free time that he possibly can, and he has a large family as well to look after. So it sometimes pains me to see him being criticised for not being more prolific when he's doing absolutely the best he can with the time available, really.
Yeah, that's I don't know. People are quick to criticize these days. I don't like some of that type of stuff that I see going on, especially on social media or whatever. It's like,
to be really honest with you, when you're a musician, you have to develop a thick skin because, you know.
Sure.
You also have to believe that talk is cheap in that respect as well. You know, there are people like to complain, or at least certainly. Voice their opinions, I suppose, is probably.
They certainly do like to do that. Yeah.
But when you understand it comes from a place of externalizing a thought, that's fine, really, at the end of the day. Just saying it doesn't necessarily make it so.
Yeah. So do you think you had an influence on him at all?
To be really honest with you, we worked really only seriously together back during the sort of late 80s, early 90s in this band Freefall that we started in. And we were, you know, we wore our influences on our sleeves back then. We were little sort of like, you know, progressive rock and heavy metal nuggets. So we'd like to imitate our heroes. Jem has now gone beyond that. I'd like to think that that I have, and probably all of the other guys I've worked with have gone beyond that as well. And I think that Jem has created a sound of his own, which, you know, not many people have really come close to equaling, and I think he really has sort of like found a niche which very few musicians can really lay claim to.
Amen. Frost, it's just fantastic stuff, and I did a bit of that on a John Mitchell special I did a little while ago. I'm a big fan of John Mitchell also.
Oh, John, I mean, yeah. And funnily enough, John has just finished a short tour in the UK.
Yeah, the Lonely Robot stuff, yeah.
Yeah, promoting the Lonely Robot album, and Jim was funnily enough on stage guesting with a couple of other sort of like UK progressive stars at the Scala in London, from what I hear. I'd love to have been to that. I mean, if it's one of the things which I miss most about being in the UK, it's experiencing the progressive rock scene there, which was, it's incredibly vital over there. It's,
yeah.
And I'm not to say that it isn't over here, but again, going back to what we were talking about, the distances involved, I mean, are considerable. So as a result, the clans of progressive of musicians and fans in the US really only get together at the festivals. Rossfest and Nearfest as was, and Prog Day and the like. So that's when it comes together really in the US, as far as I can see.
But in the UK, it seems like everybody went up to see Abel Gans and somebody else over the weekend. You know, there was a handful of bands that played, and
yeah,
there were people going up from London, and yeah, you in the United States, I'd be like, well, if there was something going on in California, I couldn't exactly jump in my car and drive there. No. You know,
but then again, that's one of the great things about the internet. The internet shrinks the world. I mean, it's the very fact that you and I are talking right now, and we're not exactly next door neighbors either, right. Are we? When you think about it,
I called into the Progzilla Marathon a week or two ago, and that was really cool. I hung out with Cliff and Stacy for like 3.5 hours here, you know, through Skype, and it was, you know, nice and clear, free.
I know, it was fantastic. Funnily enough, I was on that program as well. I was actually singing a song, and I was halfway through it, and Dora, my little greyhound, came downstairs, and while I was actually performing live on air, and placed her little cold nose on the end of my elbow, unbeknownst to me, and I almost shrieked halfway through the song. Yeah. Luckily, I kept it together.
Well, I'm sure everyone would have forgiven you anyway. Sitting there performing live from halfway around the world. What a neat thing, you know?
Well, as I said, we live in the 21st century now, Anthony, and it's been, all I'm waiting for now is my jetpack.
Yeah, me too. Have you ever thought about playing with any of your mates from back in England? I mean, with the internet, my last project, actually, I sent the tracks to the guitar player, and he worked on them at his house and sent me back tracks, you know, to pop into the final project. I mean, that albums get done that way these days. Have you ever thought about that you might, you know, have one of your old mates guest on something? Or, you know, you said you keep the door open, but do you have any plans to do anything like that?
Yeah, I think probably hopefully sometime next year, once I've got a couple of other projects out the way, there will be the chance for me to finish, complete, and hopefully release the next Shineback album as well, will hopefully feature some of the musicians that were on the first Shineback album, Matt Stevens from Fierce of the Dead.
Ah, yes.
Henry Rogers from Touchstone, you know, and there were other people like Deck Burke, who was also in Frost and is in his own band and in a band called Audio Plastic now, and a couple of other artists as well, which I'd like to include, which I didn't have time to include the last time round. So, yes, there will definitely be an opportunity for us to reach across the Atlantic, so yes, to speak, and pull a few UK artists over to this side of the pond.
Thanks to the magic of the internet.
Yeah, you got to love that, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I mean, when I think about what I was doing on reel-to-reel tapes, you know, 20, 25 years ago, and now what you can do on a computer, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's, you know, if I didn't know any better, I'd be pointing at it and calling it witchcraft, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's come a long way. But, yeah, I guess maybe this is a good point to wrap things up. We've covered a lot of ground. We've talked for a good 40 minutes. I don't think I want to cut much of anything out of this. It's been so fun and informative. And
thank you very much. I mean, the only one thing I will make mention to you is that the next project that I will be involved with is hopefully the recording and the release of this album by this new band Valdez, yeah, which has, as I said, Joe Cardillo and Tom Hyatt. So that will be another progressive rock album. So hopefully look for that sometime over the summer of next year.
Well, when it's ready, yeah, let me know. We're friends on Facebook now, so yeah.
I'll be delighted to chat to you again when. Yes.
Yeah, I'll put it on the show for sure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hey, it's been great talking to you, and I appreciate you soldiering on with the cold and all.
Well, you know, it's been, I have to say that it has taken my mind off it. You know, I don't know whether or not you you have this concept of man flu on this side of the Atlantic, but
yeah, I get the idea. I don't know how much my fellow Americans know of it, but I have a lot of friends back over there on Facebook and whatnot, you know. So
yeah, well, you know, I definitely have been suffering a little bit today, but fortunately, as I said, this conversation, Anthony, has really taken my mind off it. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, yeah. Actually, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention to you.
Sure.
I completely forgot about it until now, which is I also am involved in a podcast called Tabletop Genesis. And that podcast basically is a round table discussion about all things Genesis, and what we do is
very
we take
cool.
one album a week, a one album per episode, I should say, and we do a track by track analysis. We have a group of people that we sit around with, and it's hosted by a gentleman called Mike Lord, who used to be the webmaster for the official Genesis website, and has actually interviewed the members of Genesis. And we, episode by episode, we break down each of the albums track by track. And you can, if you're interested in anything Genesis related, we usually talk about it in great depth over about an hour or a couple of hours.
Very cool.
And you can download them through iTunes, or you can listen directly via streaming from tabletopgenesis.com.
Okay. Is that also on Progzilla?
That is also indeed on Progzilla. That was the reason why it reminded me, was the fact that you released through Progzilla.
Yeah. Hey, if you ever want another voice on that show, you want to get the American, I'm a bit of a Genesis head here.
That would be great. Well, we're looking to get some guests actually in the near future. We recently interviewed Steve Hackett.
awesome. I saw him just a few weeks ago here in Pittsburgh.
Oh, cool.
And I saw him last year, too. I saw him last year. I didn't get to meet him or anything, but boy, what a show. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah,
Mike Lord's good mates with him, and so we were able to sit down and actually do a proper sort of like 45-minute interview with him, which awesome. We're going to do, I think we're going to be releasing sometime in the new year.
That's awesome. So I'd like to thank Simon once again for the interview material. And I'll just close with a few of my usual things. If you like the show, you can like us on Facebook, Prog-Watch on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter, @ProgSquatch. And also, please go check out the website. If you're at all interested in any of the back episodes, season one is complete. Season two is about two-thirds of the way there. No, about a third of the way there. I'm sorry. And season three, I'm trying to keep current. As I release a podcast each week, I'm trying to make sure I add that to the site. So there are quite a few of the past episodes there. If you're interested, progwatch.com, no hyphen or anything, all one word, progwatch.com. You can also email me, progsquatch, all one word, @gmail.com. And I will say to you, as I always do, prog on, brothers and sisters. But I'm going to let us ride out with another great song from Simon Godfrey in his Tiny Fish years. The name of the song is Wide Awake at Midnight, and it's from their album The Big Red Spark. So long, folks. Thanks for coming along.
I think I'm lost inside your eyes. You pet me like a fool. Glad and laughing all the time. The terror that is you. You are tired of me. I'm tired of wasting time.